This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In 2013, two brutal murders left the city of Davis, California, paralyzed in fear.
The victims were an elderly couple. It was up close and personal.
I'm 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty. I thought I had seen it all. Until I encountered the mastermind behind those murders.
I think the word is psychotic.
This is 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders. Follow and listen to 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you know what that music means. Can only mean one thing at 7:30 on a weekday on Sports Radio 610 on Payne and Pendergast. That is the walkout music for the Texans executive vice president and general manager, Nick Caserio, who joins us here in advance of week one of the 2025 season. Nick, it's great to talk to you. How are you feeling this morning, my man?
Morning, fellas. Great to be here. Does that the music mean we're going to talk about the clash in Paris?
I was going to ask you, Nick. So you like everybody else, didn't have a game this past weekend. So did you just settle in like I did and just kind of kick your feet up and you have college football on one TV and CM Punk on the other TV? Does Kathleen allow that?
I probably saw a little more college football than CM Punk, but I did see some of the clips. So I'm sure your TV is better than mine. It's probably a lot better for your viewing.
So you settled in and watched a little college football. Do you get to actually get to enjoy it? Because you're kind of like it's at least a little bit of downtime before the season. Or are you still watching it through that scouting lens?
Probably watching it more from a big picture scouting lens. There happen to be some pretty good matchups over the weekend, so you're seeing some of the better players play against one another. So it's just a quick cursory overview, and then you're going to do a deeper dive. We had a number of folks that were out over the country. We had a number of scouts at the different games. It's really just an initial starting point, but not really looking at it as a fan, looking at it more from a, all right, two competitive teams. There's a number of prospects and players on the field at one time. How's the game going? How's the flow going? And sometimes, depending on the channel and the game, you get to see some things up close. You get to see some of the quarterback communication, some of the things that they have to handle. So there's always a benefit. There's a TV scouting element, but then you're going to go back to the All-22 and do a deeper dive when you go through your process.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Nick, because that part of it fascinates me, the difference between watching the All-22 versus watching on television. And I always looked at it as, man, when coaches and personnel people watch on television, it must be really frustrating because you really can't see what the receivers and defensive backs are doing for a large majority of the time. But there, like what you just said, I never thought of it that way. There's a benefit to being able to see some of the up-close stuff that you don't necessarily get on the All-22.
For sure, Seth. You can glean a number of different things. Sometimes you can't see the whole play, how it ends up unfolding, but there are things that you can gain from a TV copy. Even during the course of the year when we're watching our opponents, there's TV copies. I mean, you guys watch all the NFL games. I mean, there's 4,000 cameras that are in the stadium, so when they have one right on top of the center, I mean, there's a lot of things that you can see. So you're kind of combining everything together. So you might be going back through the All-22, and when the play comes up, you might say to yourself, oh, I remember that play. I saw that play and what happened. But then you're looking at the overall context of the play and what goes on. So part of our responsibility is to piece it all together. You're not going to put like one is more important than the other, but the All-22 certainly has relevance, but there's a lot of relevance to the TV copy as well.
You know what? This is a big win for the movie Draft Day. because remember when they're breaking
I've never
down
seen the movie, so
manager.
I can't speak to that.
That was exactly what happened. Now the TV copy, which had been available to everybody for like 6 months in this instance, Kevin Costner notices something about the way one of the linebackers in the draft operated based on the TV copy.
So essentially our job is a really big movie, so I guess we're all Hollywood stars.
Yeah, we don't ask for much, but if and when the time comes that you watch draft day, can you please allow Seth and I to sit next to you while you're watching it?
I'll probably be a lot older than I am now.
That's fine.
So it won't be on my radar anytime soon. Yeah, so okay. Sorry, Kevin, but no, I'm not really into it.
Hey, last thing, we'll get to NFL stuff here, I promise, but as long as we're talking about the college, as you know, Nick, I watched the Notre Dame-Miami game on Sunday night, and it felt like every Miami guy that made a play in that game, Sean McDonough's going, that's a transfer from Jacksonville State. That's a transfer from LSU. That's a transfer from here. They were all transfers, it felt like. And I was curious watching this game, as you're scouting, how has all the transfer portal stuff affected the way you guys scout players? Does it make it more chaotic, or in some ways does it actually make it more beneficial? You've got more data points to work with.
No, I think you articulated very well, Sean. It hasn't necessarily created more work, and we don't really view it any differently. What we try to do is just understand the rationale and the thought process behind each individual player and the reason that they transferred. When you look across the country, you've seen multiple examples of players transferring from, call it, big program to big program. You have other players that have transferred up. When you look at the Rams, you know, Fisk and Verse are two good examples of players who essentially transferred up. And I mean, they're two of the better players that they have on their team. So I think our job is just to understand the context of what went into it. Say Miami, they've put an emphasis on the transfer portal. Some teams are a little more portal-centric than others. When you look at Indiana with Coach Cignetti, essentially he took a large cohort of players that were with him at JMU, and they showed up in Indiana. So it's just to understand the landscape. We're never going to penalize a player because he's transferred multiple times. You just have to understand what went into it. Now, as you do a deeper dive, if the motive was not necessarily for football-related reasons or there was something more that went into it, then there's a financial component that we're all familiar with that we have to be cognizant of. So you just have to put all the pieces of the puzzle together and just understand, A, how the program is built, what do they emphasize? I think, you know, Clemson, I mean, Dabo's talked about this. They haven't really been big portal. They haven't been into the portal. Now they've had a few over the last few years. But it's really, what's the philosophy of the program? How do they build it? Clemson, Georgia, how they go about it, Ohio State, maybe a little bit different than some other programs. It doesn't mean one's right or wrong. It just means that that's their process. That's how they've put the team together. And our job is to understand some of the dynamics that went into it.
What if you're facing a team like the Rams this week, since we're talking about watching games on television at least, the Rams don't play any of their starters all preseason long, or by and large, very, very few of them in the preseason games. Is that a disadvantage compared to the way some other teams operate? And I know that most teams don't play their starters much anyway, but just in terms of really seeing perhaps what they're working on, do you have a little less than you might with another team?
The reality is week one is probably where the most unknowns take place for the reasons that you articulated, Seth. Some players have played, some players haven't. There's a number of new players that have come on from other teams. How are they going to deploy them? How are they going to utilize them? Part of that is going to transpire during the course of the game. So what we have to focus on, make sure that we're sound in the things that we're doing, focus on our fundamentals and techniques, be sound in the call, just be able to go out there and rely on the communication and the work that we've put in training camp, understanding that there's going to be adjustments that we're going to have to make, other teams are going to have to make, especially in the first week. And then once you get into, call it, weeks 3 to 4, essentially teams probably declare about what they look like, how they play, how the personnel is deployed, all those types of things. So there's nothing we can do about it. You know, I'd say in the Rams' case, the staffs have a certain level of continuity. So what they've done over the past couple of years, what Sean's done offensively, what Coach Shula has done defensively, what Coach Blackburn has done in the kicking game, at least you have a reference point. Now, what that looks like in 2025, we're probably going to all find out together.
Nick Caserio, Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager, joining us on Sports Radio 610. Nick, we'll get into the Rams matchup with you during this conversation for sure. Just coming out of training camp now and heading into the season, we've been talking a ton about the offensive side of the football, obviously, and Nick Caley, new system, the responsibility C.J. Stroud is going to have. How are we feeling right now? You know, C.J.'s now been through the entire offseason with Nick Caley and through an entire training camp. How do you feel about where C.J. is at heading into this season?
Yeah, I mean, we're ready to go. We're in a pretty good spot. So we've put a lot of work from call it the spring up until this point. Now we're going to get into more of a game plan centric kind of week to week. We have the foundation of the offense that's in place. And then now we're going to look at what's the opponent? What are the things that we're comfortable with? What are the things that we can focus on? What are the things that we can emphasize? And then as we go, probably make some tweaks along the way. So we're in a pretty good spot. We're going to go out here and practice the next 3 days and kind of put the finishing touches on and everything. But the reality is, well, hopefully we'll go out there and we're going to do the things and run the things that we know how to do and then match them up with what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. So in the end, it's going to come down to, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, same thing offensively as we talked about defensively. It's just focusing on your fundamentals and techniques. Probably have some core principles and core concepts that you're going to rely on early that everybody is comfortable with so that you can go out there, you can play fast, and just react to what the defense is doing.
Nick, I'm not going to ask you to break down UNC football or anything, or even that game, but obviously you have a lot of experience with Bill Belichick. And Sean and I were talking about it yesterday, and I said, Sean, there was a period in the 2010s where it seemed like every other year the Patriots would get destroyed early in the season by the Chiefs or the Lions or somebody like that, and then come back and win a Super Bowl later on in the season. What's the mindset in the building like after a loss like that early in the season when Belichick was the coach, and what was the strategy for dealing with something like that? Because obviously they did a good job of rebounding from it.
Sure. I think this league is very process-oriented, and it's such a week-to-week league, so you can't let what happened, good or bad, the previous week impact what's going to happen in future weeks. So in our case, the focus will be on the Rams, regardless of the outcome on Sunday, which hopefully we play well enough to win. But regardless of the outcome, it's take inventory of what happened, understand where the issues are, and let's focus on those areas, try to get those fixed and corrected, and then figure out if those are going to be applicable moving forward or are they not. And then once we turn the page, then it's going to be about the next opponent and what do we need to do that week to put ourselves in a position. So I would say over the course of time, I think that was probably one of the things that we did probably fairly well. And just focused on the present, focus on the 1 week at a time, one game at a time, and just focus on that opponent. When you start to let things that happened in the past in one game affect the next few weeks, and then there's sort of a snowball effect, it's just going to lead to potentially, you know, the result that you don't covet. So I'd say that's the way the league is designed, and it's such a week-to-week endeavor. I know it's kind of a cliche, and nobody really wants to hear that, but that's the reality of the situation. And D'Amico has talked about this multiple times whenever he's been asked about it. I've been, you know, asked about it as well. And I think that's where you have to keep the focus. You have to have a certain level of discipline and focus to be able to block that out. Again, regardless of the result, good or bad, because what happened one previous game, it's hopefully is, you know, not going to affect what goes into, you know, your work for the next week.
I'm looking at a headline from September 26, 2018 that says the Patriots look finished, so they will probably win the Super Bowl, which is exactly
which
what
they
that was.
Did.
That was the year they lost to the Jaguars, and then got drubbed by the Lions. And then a couple years since you guys had lost to the Chiefs early in the season, and then won the Super Bowl last year that year. So yeah, that tracks.
Well, it's never fun. Like those, I'm going to say those days after those games are very much fun, but it's work, and you just have to put it behind you. And it leads to some long nights, some long trips home. I mean, a Kansas City trip. We were flying back from Kansas City in the middle of the night because it was a Monday night game. So,
That's the worst. That's the worst. Oh no, getting destroyed in a night game on the road. It's the worst. Oh, you're just ever. No, let me tell you a quick story. So the
please.
Okay, so this was, I think, in 1990. I think it was 1998. We were I was with the Jaguars. I was injured at the time, so I was watching from home, but it was on Sunday Night Football up in Minnesota. They just got destroyed. Third-string quarterback Jonathan Quinn started the game, and it was bad. It was bad.
Oh, that was a good Minnesota team. That was Randy Moss and all that.
Yeah. No,
was that Randall Cunningham?
Randall Cunningham was 15-1 year.
That was a good
team. They had
team.
John yeah. Randall on the defensive line with yeah. going against a third-string offensive guard. It was bad. So it's a night game. It stinks. You get beat up there. They're flying home, but the airport was fogged in. So they had to go land in Orlando, sit on the tarmac from like 4 to 6 a.m. And then come to Jacksonville. I was injured, so I was going in to do my rehab on a Tuesday morning. Assuming it would be me and a few of the other guys who were injured going in there, I get out of my car and I see Mark Brunell and Tony Boselli in their suits getting out of their car to walk in. I was like, what's going on, guys?
Hey guys.
He said, well, Coughlin said everybody has to
see,
come in and
get a workout.
See, the NFL
isn't as glamorous as everybody thinks.
Coughlin made everybody who had been sitting on the airplane all night long go from the airport to go do a workout and get their cardio in. They had to do a 15-minute exercise bike because he was just so disgusted with everybody. Which I feel like with all the modern analytics, that might have been the analytics staff might have been. Yeah,
the sleep studies would probably tell you that didn't work out very well.
Oh, man. We didn't know what sleep was back in 1998. Nick Caserio joining us here on Sports Radio 610. So, Nick, it looks like Arianta Arisuri is going to get his first start at left tackle going up against a pretty good Rams front, including Jared Verse. How ready do you feel Arianta is, and how do you help out a rookie in his first start against a defense like this?
Yeah, we're probably as ready as we'll be on the offensive line. So, you know, we understand the challenge in front of us against the Rams. I mean, this is arguably like top to bottom, like 1 through 5 when you include Puna Ford in there, which not everybody's really talking about Puna. But,
yeah.
I mean, they have probably – this is collectively, you know, one of the better defensive lines we'll probably see over the course of the year, just from a 1 through 5 basis. Like, we're going to face good defensive linemen every week, and some teams maybe only have 1 or 2, but, you know, when you look at the Rams, I mean, they literally have 5 guys who are as good as anybody in the league at their respective positions. So we understand the challenges that are in front of us, so it's going to take a collective effort, like how we play offensively. You know, we're certainly going to have to account for their defensive line and almost every snap, how they use them, where they line up. I mean, Fisk has a lot of position versatility. He's played defensive tackle. He's played defensive end. They put him on, you know, call it outside linebacker on the edge. I mean, Verse kind of moves around the front a little bit. So, I mean, this is a really good front. Again, it's probably as good of a front, just top to bottom, that we're going to face 1 through 5. So, you know, we're going to need everybody to just focus on their execution, their fundamentals, and their assignment, understand what the intent is on each play, and just make sure the communication is clean. It's going to be a hostile environment. It's going to be on the road. So we just got to make sure we have all 5 doing the same thing. And the tight ends will be a part of it, and the running backs will be a part of it. Quarterback will certainly have responsibility in it as well. So it's going to take a collective effort to handle their defense without question.
Yeah, that's we were actually talking about Puna Ford just last hour, because I'm guilty of it myself. I've been watching a lot of Jared Verse as of late, and you kind of lose sight of the fact that Puna Ford was a huge addition for them. And look, that Chargers game last year in the playoffs, for the Texans fans that don't remember, Puna Ford was on that team. And even when the Chargers defense was taking their lumps, Puna Ford he kept showing up. So the way I'm looking at this game, Nick, is I feel like, you know, with the new – There's a mindset that, you know, D'Amico has talked about it. The offensive linemen have talked about it. I feel like this might be the perfect game if you want to be about a new mentality of being physical and being blue collar and gritty and all that. It feels like a challenge they can really embrace.
No, it's certainly going to be a challenging situation for our team. I mean, this is a good football team that we're playing, but, you know, we have confidence in the players that will be on the field. You know, we feel that we'll be prepared by the time we step on the plane on Friday. We're going out there a day early. So, I mean, the goal is to have a good week, just to understand. And once you get into the regular season, and we've talked about this, it's such a personnel-driven league. It's just understanding who you're playing. The scheme is the scheme, but also understanding who the players are, what are their strengths, what are weaknesses, what are some areas that you might be able to exploit, because that's as important as anything else.
What Nick, for the Rams, what does Devontae Adams bring to them? They've already got Puka Nacua, obviously. So now you got Devontae Adams, who's been one of the best receivers in football over the last decade, and going up against what is obviously a strength for you guys with Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamari Lassiter.
No, Devontae brings a lot. I mean, he's been a very productive player in this league for a long time. I think the one thing that he provides, he has an element of position versatility. He can line up in multiple spots. He can play in the perimeter. He can play inside the formation. You know, when he was with the Jets last year, I mean, he hit us on a touchdown pass there on third down coverage, you know, in a slot fade, which we had decent coverage. I mean, JP was in a good spot, but, you know, Devontae ended up making a good move. So the thing about Devontae, he does a number of things well. He's very smart. He's a very instinctive player. He'll probably be lined up all over the formation. Puka gives them some flexibility as well. Atwell is a little bit more, I would say, specific to pass game. You know, maybe third down kind of brings a speed element. You know, and Whittington's done a good job for them in his role kind of as a fourth receiver. So, I mean, they've talked about Devontae all offseason. I think the four tight ends that are on the roster as well will factor in, including the second-round pick Ferguson. So this is where, going back to what I said a little bit earlier, there's going to be an element of kind of figuring out where they lined up, how are they deploying them, how are they utilizing them. But, I mean, Devontae's a really good football player, and he certainly presents challenges on the offensive side of the ball, you know, no question.
Nick, I don't think we talked about this with you the last time because maybe I hadn't noticed it yet. But this training camp, I can't remember the last time I was impressed with the young running backs in pass protection. I don't think it's a thing that I've ever even really I noticed or thought about because usually it doesn't happen. But, you know, with Jawar Jordan and Woody Marks this year, there were some things they did that you don't typically see out of young players. What part of Nick Caley or the coaching staff in general, and then as well, you know, those two players obviously as well, like, what goes into that? Why was that so seemingly impressive this year?
No, it's a great observation, Seth. I think pass protection is about a mentality and an overall mindset, and you have to want to pass protect, and it's understanding A, who are you blocking, B, there's going to be contact and there's going to be a physical element that's involved. And a lot of times, if you have the linebacker in A or B gap, he's going to be coming downhill at you. So you're either going to brace for contact and play with good body position and leverage, or you're not. You're going to get run over. So I would say a ton of credit should go to Danny Barrett. We put an emphasis on pass protection, and playing running back is not just about carrying a ball and catching the ball. It's about pass protection, especially on third down, is an important element. You're not going to get the back out all the time, so inevitably he's going to have to do something. He's going to have to block. He's going to have to block a linebacker. He might be chipping an edge. So there's a number of things. So it takes a certain mentality. Say that group overall has an element of toughness to them and physicality, and you see that in all of them, top to bottom. You mentioned Jawar, even though he's on a practice squad. But he did as good a job as any. I mean, British did a really good job in that capacity. I mean, Dare, that's a strength of his. So they have all been asked to do it, and it just comes with the territory. So, and there's a selfless element that's involved, and I would say that group kind of embodies the overall philosophy and mentality of our team. It's whatever it takes to get the job done. So they work really hard at it. Danny really works at it with them, and people, it's like receivers blocking. Like if you're on this football team and you play a receiver, you're going to have to block. This isn't like it's optional whether or not, like, there's no choice. So you're going to have to go in there. You're going to have to block the force. You're going to have to dig out a defender. And the way the defenses play nowadays, there's going to be an extra defender. So how do you account for that extra defender? It's probably going to be the receiver. So the receiver's going to go in there and do the dirty work and dig them out, or he's not. And if he's not, he's probably going to not be playing here. He's going to be on another team. So, I mean, Hutch will go in there and do it. Nico will go in there and do it when he's asked to do it. I mean, even Tank, I mean, I know he went in there and he got hurt, you know, against Denver a couple of years ago, but it's not for lack of effort and, you know, mindset and toughness. So it's emblematic of what we want this team to look like. But I'd say that's something they take a lot of pride in. And Danny, you know, Danny Barrett deserves a lot of credit for their performance of the backs without question.
Nick.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In 2013, two brutal murders left the city of Davis, California, paralyzed in fear.
The victims were an elderly couple. It was up close and personal.
I'm 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty. I thought I had seen it all until I encountered the mastermind behind those murders.
I think the word is psychotic.
This is 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders. Follow and listen to 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Casario joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Nick, reports yesterday that Davis Mills has agreed to an extension for the 2026 season. I thought Davis has had a really good camp. How much did that factor into you guys wanting to make sure he was around for another year after this upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, we always look at those situations case by case. Let's say in Davis's situation, he's been as consistent a player over the past, call it, a couple of years as probably any player on our team. To your point, Sean, he had a really good training camp, so a lot of confidence in Davis. And you know, sometimes those things work themselves out. We had good constructive conversations with his representatives, and it's something that we all felt, you know, pretty strongly about from the offensive staff, D'Amico and I, and we were able to kind of get that self worked out. So Davis deserves a lot of credit, as does the offensive staff, Gerard, Jerry, Nick Haley, and Davis has put the work in. So, you know, that position is valuable, and, you know, it's not important until it is. So, like, we fill that room overall between CJ, Davis, and Graham, that we feel like it's a pretty strong room. So if we can kind of keep a certain level of continuity in place for a period of time, like, that's the goal. So, you know, happy that we're able to work that out with Davis. And, you know, Davis has earned it without question.
Yeah, Davis is interesting, Nick, because he was the starter for, you know, in 2022, he was a starter coming into camp, and we know that there was kind of a bumpy season for him, but he was at one point the named starter of an NFL team, and then a young quarterback comes in, CJ, and obviously highly drafted, he's going to be the guy eventually. But what does it say about Davis that he seems to have kind of embraced that backup role, and what's the dynamic like between Davis and CJ?
Yeah, it's a really good room. They work well with one another. And Davis, I mean, you guys have talked to him. Davis is kind of very even keel, kind of stays down the middle. His personality doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. And the backup, that player is to provide, you know, is a good resource for whomever the starter is. I mean, they can talk about things kind of quarterback to quarterback. But Davis is very smart. He works very hard. And like I said, his personality is such that he understands what the role is. It doesn't mean that he's not competitive. He's not, you know, wanting to go out there and play. But Davis has taken advantage of his opportunities, and that's all you can ask for any player. So there's going to be competition across positions. There's going to be a starter. There's going to be a backup. There's going to be a role player. And just if you understand what your role is on the team, it doesn't mean you're going to work less. You're going to continue to work and put yourself in a position to do what's best for the team. So there's a selfless element that's involved, I would say, in the backup position, not only for our team, but across the league. So that dynamic and, you know, that how you put that room together is important. So it's something that, you know, we spend a lot of time discussing. So, you know, Davis deserves a lot of credit for the way he handles himself, is as consistent and professional as we have on a team. And to your point, Sean, I mean, there's been a lot of ups and downs in his career, but I mean, he started, I don't know, 27, 30 games, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And he's always prepared and ready to go. So, you know, credit to him for how he goes about his business.
You know, when you're talking with somebody like Davis that you've known for a long time, you have a relationship with him, you know, obviously there's a certain trust level for him to have re-upped with you a couple times already. Do you have explicit conversations about potential trade opportunities or scenarios that, hey, if something comes up where there's a trade and it could be advantageous to both of us, that we're both open to it?
We're always open. You know, kind of how we operate is we'll listen, but in the end, we're going to make the decision that we feel is best for our organization. So I'd say Davis is a player that, you know, teams have asked about. He's certainly respected for, you know, what he provides and what he brings to the table around the league. So in the end, we're going to do what we feel is best for our team and just try to make good, smart decisions along the way.
I guess, yeah. So, like, as a backup quarterback in general, as a general rule of thumb, I'm like, Davis, you don't have to speak for Davis, but, like, there's an understanding that, okay, I'm signing a deal, but the best thing for that quarterback sometimes might be that he gets traded. So he's like, they're generally, they know that it's a possibility that he's not signing a, you know, up for necessarily 2 years for sure with the Texans.
I think everybody knows kind of in this league, anything's a possibility.
Yeah.
So ultimately we're going to, you know, take the information, and if something were presented to us, the way we work is take the information, D'Amico and I will talk about it, and then we'll decide what we feel, you know, is best for us. So we're pretty open-minded, but by the same token, in the end, we're going to focus on our team and doing what's best for us.
You're listening to KLT, KLT, FM HD2, Houston and Odyssey Sports Station, and we're joined by Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio. It sounds like, Nick, that C.J. Gardner-Johnson is going to be back for week one here, according to D'Amico on Monday. I personally, the fact that we didn't get to see C.J. in joint practices or any of the preseason games has me very excited. What do you expect him to bring to this defense this year?
Yeah, CD's certainly trending in the right direction. So hopefully he has, you know, a good few days here this week. He's worked really hard to put him in a position. So, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, CD's a good football player. He has a certain level of toughness and physicality that he brings. He's a very instinctive, very aware player. He's kind of played multiple positions over the course of his career. So excited about what potentially he could bring to our team. You know, which is why we made the trade for him. So you know, excited for CD, and he's worked really hard to get to this point, so hopefully have a good week and put himself in a position to be ready to go for Sunday.
Jake Andrews, I guess, you know, we probably haven't talked as much about Jake Andrews as we have because he's played 70-some snaps in the NFL, at least on offense, a few more on special teams. But what was it about him that, you know, made you interested in him? And then obviously what was it about him that's earned him this starting job, or at least as far as Sean and I know, he's the starting center on Sunday.
Yeah, sure. No, he was a player that we evaluated when he was coming out of Troy in 22 or 23, whatever year that was. He had a certain, I'd say, playing style, physicality, toughness about him that what we liked, and we graded him kind of accordingly. And then he was drafted there in the fourth round by New England. And then kind of was up and down there. There's a number of things that took place, some coaching things, you know, different coaches, different philosophies. And then in 24, his season essentially was cut short with an injury. So I think it was a situation where when they moved on, it was just about he probably needed a fresh start, and they were kind of moving in a different direction. So that was a situation for us. We went back to, you know, we've talked about this. We went back to our notes from the draft. What do we think of the player coming out? Even though, to your point, Seth, there wasn't a lot of film, but that's where you got to go back and trust the information that your scouts had accumulated. And the fact that Cole had coached him, we had some more better understanding of what the player was about. We felt that was a player that when we claimed him, he would at least be competitive with the rest of the group, understanding we were kind of still piecing that together. But from jump, I mean, his attitude, his mindset, the way he works, I mean, he's upstairs as much as any player watching film, spending time with Cole and Zach, and just making sure that he's ready to go. He doesn't say a lot. He kind of lets his actions do the talking, which is emblematic of a lot of players on this team. And we had legit competition at center. JP's played a number of snaps. He started and played quality football for us. You know, Juice really has the most position flexibility between those guys, center to guard, but Juice has started at center. So we let the competition kind of sort itself out. The reality is we're probably going to need everybody in that room at some point. But Jake has earned this opportunity with his work ethic, with his mindset, and, you know, we're glad that he's here.
Yeah, what along that offensive line, Nick, like you got nine guys that are on the 53-man. I know you got a few more on the practice squad, but the nine guys on the 53-man, half, I think more than half the guys might be new faces to you guys this year that you picked up in the offseason. What would you say is the biggest thing that you were prioritizing when you were looking at bringing in those new faces on the offensive line?
I wouldn't say there was any one thing in particular, mm-hmm. Sean. It was just there were some players that we moved on from whose contracts were up, mm-hmm. or that we released. So we had to kind of backfill that room and refill that room. So we kind of did it in stages. It wasn't, well, we're going to do A, B, C, and D. Like, for me to sit here and tell you that, like, I'm not that smart. Like, what we did is take inventory of what are the opportunities that are available to us, does it make sense, and try to create as much competition as possible. And when you look at the composition of that room, honestly, they've kind of come from everywhere. Players that were here, players that we drafted, mm-hmm. players that we claimed, players that we traded for. So for me to sit here and tell you, well, oh, yeah, well here we go. We're going to bring all these guys in here. This is how we're going to do it, and this is what's going to happen. No chance. Like, I'm not going to tell you that. Like, maybe somebody else, like maybe Omar can tell you that, but that wasn't really part of the plan. So it was just to try to create as much competition as possible and let that sort itself out. But by the same token, also bring in players that maybe have a certain degree of position versatility. And when you look at the composition, you have young players. You have young players that have experience in the league. You have some veteran players that have started a number of games. And reality is, whoever is in this building, there's a good chance that they're going to be on the field at some point. And we have confidence in those players. Which is the reason that they're here.
The biggest mystery on the team for me right now, and I mean that literally, is Trent Brown. And I say literally because he's 6'8", 360 pounds. He's a gigantic mystery. And like, what?
A massive and he's coming human off being. He's a massive human
being. He's big.
how is he physically? And, you know, if you had to use him this year, would you be able to use him soon? Or is it still kind of a long-term thing?
No, we'll probably have an idea here. Trent's on a practice squad, so he should be out there practicing. He's kind of was working through, you know, rehab and some different things here in the offseason. He was coming off. He had the injury kind of week 4, 5, 6, whatever it was in Cincinnati last year. So Trent's a work in progress. Trent's also played a lot of football, so I think the big focus right now is going out there and getting some real legitimate live reps in practice, and we'll kind of monitor that progress as he goes, like we do with all the players on a practice squad, you know, and all the players that, you know, whether they're active, inactive on a practice squad. I mean, the goal for those players is the same thing. Go out there, try to perform the best of your ability on a day-to-day basis, and then, you know, we'll evaluate their progress and try to figure out what makes the most sense for us.
Nick, if I'm not mistaken, pre-COVID, you would never have been able to have Trent Brown on the practice squad. It was all younger guys. How big a luxury is that now to have those spots where you can actually have veteran guys on the practice squad?
No, the league's done a good job of just kind of creating some opportunities. You're absolutely right, Sean. I mean, the practice squad was composed. It was a certain cohort of players, and you had a cap in terms of the number of players that you actually could have on a practice squad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they put the rules in place where you had a little more flexibility, where you can have veteran players like Jakob Johnson, like Trent Brown, like Harrison Bryan on the practice squad. You can have up to 6 of those players that kind of fit that quote-unquote veteran category. And then the other 10 are standard to practice squad exceptions. So, I mean, part of our job, just to understand the rules, like what are our options, what are the opportunities, and it might give a player another an opportunity if he's not on a roster, he's on a practice squad, but that puts him a step closer to potentially playing. So I'd say everybody has probably benefited across the league, and it makes a lot of sense. And when you look at the rigors and the demands that are placed on the players, you know, it's very taxing physically and mentally. So you just want to make sure you have enough reinforcements in the building so that at some point when a guy can't play because of injury, like you have an option, hopefully in your building, and go in there and play at a competitive level.
You know, Nick, one of my favorite coaching positions in all of sports is the bullpen catcher. Because you're a coach, but you're the bullpen catcher. You're not allowed to play in the games. That's why I need you to push for this offseason. I want
to find the equivalent of the bullpen catcher in the NFL.
Like bullpen pass rushers that you could just have guys
that can never play.
They can have. They're not allowed to play, but like J.J. Watt could come in and on Wednesdays and Thursdays be out there for blitz period and stuff, and just give your guys a look without, you know, so you can have kind of one-on-one battles, but with less taxation on them. Yes.
And then he can go call his games on Sunday, so get a couple of days of practice, and then go call some games on Sunday.
Yeah, that'll be his production meeting. Yeah.
Oh. You know what? Speaking of which,
why don't you pitch that to him?
That's my dream, for there to be a bullpen pass rusher position. But Tom Brady, he broadcasts games on Sundays. He's going to be allowed in the production meetings this year. You've got a lot of experience with Tom Brady, and you know the way his brain works. If one of your players is going in to do a production meeting with Tom Brady, do you tell him to watch out? Do you tell him, like, hey, little, like, almost like he's meeting with Hannibal Lecter or something? Like, just listen. Be careful about what you say to this guy because he's also an owner of the Raiders.
You can never go wrong by saying less. So if you follow that formula, you're going to be in a good spot. I mean, Tom's one of the smartest people, like, literally, that's ever been in this league. So He's very strategic and very smart, so be careful about. Don't give him any extra ammunition because he's certainly going to use it to his advantage.
Will Henderson's going to be so nervous the first time he goes into a meeting with Tom Brady. He's either going to get, because it's so hard for him to not talk.
I know. Will would be the one I'd be most nervous about, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like Tom would give him a couple compliments or something, and maybe some cookies that his wife cooked. And we'll just make sure
like Tom's not trying to recruit Will to come out there.
Crosby. No, please.
That's when you got to fill him in on all the dirt about Tom. Yeah. What a horrible person he actually is. Will, this is what you don't know about this guy.
Oh my God, that's great. Texas Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Nick, Sam Warren had a really good piece in the Chronicle, I think yesterday, about Cole Popovich and kind of his journey to, you know, through the NFL, well, really through some small college stuff into the NFL and now here to Houston. And he was steeped under the wings of Dante Scarnecchia when he was in New England. What have you seen from Cole so far as the guy coaching the offensive line I'm not saying he's Dante Scarnecchia, but at least some of the traces of some of the learnings that he's had through the years here.
Yeah, Cole's worked really hard during this opportunity, and he didn't have it easy. When you look at kind of where he started and to where he is now, it's a credit to him and his approach. And I think what you're hoping for as a player is just whomever the coach is just for somebody that's consistent, that's honest, and that's authentic. And I think Cole embodies a lot of those principles. And we're all a product of whatever our upbringing is and how we were trained and what we learned. But there's only one of that equivalent person. There's only one Dante Scarnecchia. There's only one Tom Brady. There's only one Cole Popovich. So you really have to be true to who you are. But you observe and you watch and you learn and you see some of the things that worked. Why was that effective? How did the players respond to certain things? So your job as a coach is to figure out, how am I going to teach? How am I going to communicate? And what's going to be my process on a day-to-day basis? I think the way Cole goes about his business, he has his own style, which is important, but he's very smart. He works very, very hard. He played the position, so he has a little bit of a background in terms of, you know, what the expectation, understanding is of scheme, etc. And he and Zach Yenzer have worked really well together. And your job as a coach is just to get the players prepared so when they go out there, they can perform at an optimum level. Cole's worked really hard. There's a reason that we brought him into the program when we did. And he's put himself in a position to lead the group. It's not an easy job. I mean, you're managing a lot of different people, personalities. It's a bigger room as there is on a team. I mean, we got 9 on the roster, 3 on a practice squad. So you're dealing with, 12 offensive linemen. Defensive line is close, but you're managing a lot of people. And there's only 5 that can play. So how do you handle those situations? I mean, there's a delicate balance in there. But, I mean, I think we all learn from coaches that we're around. I mean, I learned a tremendous amount from Dante. I mean, I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration and appreciation for his work ethic, the way he works. I think that's one of the things that anybody that was around him took away from him. Nobody worked harder than Dante Scarnecchia, even at the end. I mean, he literally was in the building at 4:00 in the morning. He was the first one in the building. Like, you knew, like, if there's a coach that was there, it was going to be Dante. So, I mean, I think when you see something like that, you can't but tip your hat and say, you know what? I might be smart to kind of maybe take some of those principles and philosophies with me. But, Cole's earned this opportunity, and we're glad he's here.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In 2013, 2 brutal murders left the city of Davis, California, paralyzed in fear.
The victims were an elderly couple. It was up close and personal.
I'm 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty. I thought I had seen it all until I encountered the mastermind behind those murders.
He's, I think the word is psychotic.
This is 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders. Follow and listen to 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to hiring a position coach, is that like obviously you have the, you know, you talk to common acquaintances and all of that, but do you do actual film work on going back and kind of seeing how players have progressed through the season with guys, you know, groups they've worked with?
There's a lot of different ways you can handle it. So if you have players where they coach X number of players, you might ask them for their evaluation of the player. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? And then when you get into a meeting, you know, with the coach or with D'Amico, there's probably going to be some scheme things that come up. Hey, what are you teaching here? What are you looking for? What's your thought process? How do you go about it? So there's always a lot of, there's no one size fits all when you're doing an interview, but you're trying to get information and you're really trying to get a sense and a fit and a feel for the overall personality. And does it fit within the program that you're building? D'Amico's as good as anybody is just understanding people and working with people. So there's always a lot of factors that go into, you know, bringing assistant coaches on. And the reality is it's like players. You might think it's going to go a certain way, and for whatever reason doesn't work out, no hard feelings. You just move a different direction. But you've got to go through your process and try to arrive at an endpoint that everybody feels comfortable with.
Nick Caserio joining us. Hey, Nick, before we get you out of here, the calculus changed again over the last week for highest non-paid or highest – why am I having such a hard time saying this? Highest non-quarterback, highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL – and it's that whole thing's taken a big jump this offseason. If there's a contractual theme, it's, man, it was in the low 30s, and now it's $47 million a year. I'm just curious from a GM's perspective, especially one who's probably going to have some big contracts coming up here soon. When you're seeing that, put us in your shoes for a second, I guess, when you're seeing that sort of market explode the way that it has.
Yeah, sure. You're cognizant of everything. I mean, we're observing what's going on. It's our job is just having an understanding of the market. And there might be some dynamics that affect your team. There might be some that don't. So just have an understanding of what it means. It's, again, it's not one size fits all. Every contract and every discussion is going to be on a case-by-case basis. So you're looking at the market, you're looking at the growth, where's the salary cap, where's your team, how many players do you have under contract, what are your future commitments going to be. So there's multiple conversations that are going to take place, but the players that receive those contracts have earned those contracts, and they're some of the best players in the league, and you know that's just the way the market is. So our job is to understand it. There's nothing we could do about it. You know, we can't go back and try to change it. Well, it's just grown this much. I mean, well, that's what it is. So your job is to adjust and adapt and understand and just figure out how that fits within the context of your team.
Is Notre Dame going to be okay this year, Nick?
I think Notre Dame will be fine.
Okay.
Notre Dame, no panic. Who do they play? Who's coming up here next?
They have the bye week. Then they have the Aggies after that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a good game last year. Is that game in South Bend this year?
It's in South Bend, and I'm just looking at the Texans schedule. No, you're home that weekend, so you won't be able.
You're trying to match up schedule. I'm doing the same thing.
You're going to meander over to South Bend for a game.
Notre Dame will be okay. They got one of the best coaches in football, and I thought CJ Carr did a really nice job. So I think he's going to be a pretty good player.
Okay, so we've got.
I think the program's in pretty good hands.
Okay, that's good. I feel a little bit better. And
Heinisch's brother, of course.
Donovan Heinisch, baby. Yeah.
when you're out, especially when you go to games or go to practice for various colleges, is it, do you start to get a pretty good feel for okay, this is a disciplined program versus like, oh boy, like what the hell's going on here with these guys?
No, absolutely, Seth. I mean, we're evaluating programs as much as we are evaluating players, because players are ultimately a byproduct of the environment of what the program is. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It just goes back to understanding what are the emphasis points. What's the philosophy? How have they built a team? What are they coaching? What do they allow players to get away with? What are they not allowed to get away with? So we're absolutely evaluating programs, just to have an understanding, because what we're doing is saying, okay, this player in this program, and then we're trying to project him into our program. We understand what's expected in our program and demands that are placed on those players. So what programs maybe have some of the similar types of qualities? So the transition, there's a little bit more of an ease in transition. So No, you're absolutely 1,000% correct. I mean, it's something that we talk about with our staff quite often, actually, is let's understand the program. Let's understand the coaching staff. Let's understand, like, when you look at Georgia's program, what Kirby Smart is doing, a player that comes out of that program, he's probably going to make it in just about any NFL program, but the reality is that player's probably going to be able to make it in our program as well. And Kamari is a really good example of that. So that's absolutely a big part of the evaluation.
What's the biggest one, so other than Georgia, where maybe you ever stepped on a campus for the first time and with a particular coach, you thought, oh, these guys work hard. Or like, oh, this is you got to be mentally tough to play for this coach.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia, I would say when you go back to obviously some of Coach Saban's programs, I think what Coach Lanning is doing at Oregon, there's a lot of similarities to Kirby's program. So, I mean, those are some of the – just how they practice. And, again, there's certain restrictions. Sometimes you can see a team practice. You know, they're in full pads that day and they have, you know, one-on-one periods or whatever they have. But – yeah, no, there's, I would say, Kirby. You know, honestly, Sark has built a really good program down there in Texas as well. I mean, you know, they lost Ohio State the other day, but, you know, how they practice, how they go about their business, I mean, a lot of respect for what Sark has done. And I would say, honestly, when you look at Coach Elko and what he's doing at A&M, and honestly, I don't really watch that much, but I did watch the SEC profile on Netflix, so you really kind of get a behind-the-scenes view. I mean, Coach Elko doesn't mess around. I mean, he holds the players to a high standard, you know, and they play with a certain mindset and mentality, and you can see why the results are the results and why that program is moving in the right direction. So, you know, you can certainly feel it when you walk onto the campus, watch them play, watch them practice, and, you know, it's exciting to see.
Okay, so just to bring this conversation full circle, have you ever crossed a quarterback off of your big board because his teammates didn't show up to his 21st birthday party? Because that's what happened on draft day with Bo Callahan.
No, yeah. I can't say that I have. Okay. I have some rules with quarterbacks that I won't disclose here publicly on the air, but I definitely have like a checklist of things that are like, if this player has this.
Oh, man. We are going to truth serum
you. I'm not on
you.
That program.
We are going to truth serum you someday. Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Well, no, you know what? It was. I talked to D'Amico. I got to do an interview with D'Amico during training camp, and you know, I asked him about energy vampires because we heard a lot about, you know, hey, no energy vampires the first year D'Amico is here. And I told him, like, I haven't heard people use that phrase a lot. And he said, we got rid of all of them.
Not allowed in our building.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not with his personality. I mean, he's too upbeat, positive, yeah, consistent, and no complaining. Like, we don't have a lot of rules around here. That's one of them, and that's not going to change.
No Karens in the building. Yeah, big sign. Nick Caserio joining.
Well, you know, the biggest thing for me has always been, whenever a player decides that where the truth needs to be told is to by anonymous quote or something before he's ever addressed it to one of the actual coaches or something, like, you can't have that guy. Like, you know, like, be a man. If you got an issue with a coach, yeah, there's a difference between complaining and discussing. And if you got an issue with a coach, you go discuss the issue with the coach. But like airing it publicly or anonymously is like, that's you've jumped like seven places in the order of how you handle a problem.
Yeah. We're all adults. Just handle everything professionally and just have honest, constructive conversations. Not a hard formula.
There you go. Texans Executive Vice President and GM Nick Caserio. Nick, appreciate the time. I'm looking at the calendar. I think we'll get you at least once before the smack off on Halloween, so we'll be able to dig into that. You know, I'll be leaning on you for material and whatnot between now and then.
No, absolutely perfect. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks
for having us on.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate the time as always. That's Texans General Manager Nick Caserio. All right, let's bounce out here. Let's dig back into some of the things he had to say, particularly about this upcoming Week 1 matchup against the Rams, and that the offensive line, the trenches, is where this game is going to be decided. We'll discuss all of that coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In 2013, two brutal murders left the city of Davis, California, paralyzed in fear.
The victims were an elderly couple. It was up close and personal.
I'm 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty. I thought I had seen it all until I encountered the mastermind behind those murders.
I think the word is psychotic.
This is 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders. Follow and listen to 15 Inside the Daniel Marsh Murders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.